From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Friday, April 4th. Coming up, we'll learn about a new memoir from local author Larry Schnell that explores the little-known role of music in war. But first, these headlines. Dozens of protesters gathered on the University of Illinois South Quad yesterday to demand better working conditions for graduate workers. Illinois Student Newsroom's Michael Sweeney has more.
Healthcare cuts! Funding cuts!
Protesters say they want higher wages and better healthcare coverage in the face of threats to federal funding under the Trump administration. U of I graduate student Arthur Paganini is with the Graduate Employees Organization, or GEO.
How are people supposed to get a fair education? How are people supposed to conduct this research that's important to the whole world if funding is being threatened, if our healthcare costs are going up? This isn't a system that is conducive to education, to research. It's ridiculous.
He says the quality of the education provided at the U of I is suffering because of the current conditions. I'm Michael Sweeney, IPM News.
In a statement, U of I spokesman Patrick Wade said the university is committed to facilitating continued access to quality health care for graduate student employees. He said the current program, quote, remains affordable and is consistent with the terms of the existing collective bargaining agreement. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul likely isn't going to take any action against two hospitals in Chicago that have stopped gender care surgeries. Kristen Schorsch reports.
A few months ago, Lurie Children's Hospital and Northwestern Memorial Hospital stopped transgender surgeries for people younger than 19. That's after an executive order from President Trump threatened to cut federal funding. Raoul is a Democrat, and he has said hospitals can't discriminate against patients because of their gender identity. But he tells WBEZ it would be hard to make a case against the hospitals.
I don't look at Lurie or Northwestern as a bad actor here. You can't said to be acting discriminatory when the federal government is holding a gun to your head.
His office has received dozens of letters from families and advocates asking him to help resume surgeries. I'm Kristen Schorsch.
International students in Illinois and across the country are worried about losing their visa status. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said last week the State Department has revoked at least 300 foreign student visas so far. That includes one student at Southern Illinois University. Molly Parker is a journalist and faculty member at SIU. She tells the 21st show the Trump administration is targeting international students who are involved with activism.
Certainly at SIU and across the country, universities are warning students, if you participate even in peaceful protests, it could be misunderstood. If you're posting on social media, you run the risk of that being misinterpreted by, or targeted.
Administrators recommend international students carry their documents with them, be cautious around protests, and watch what they say online. Public transit agencies in downstate Illinois are worried about a fiscal cliff. Alex Degman reports.
The CTA, Metra, and PACE have money problems, but so does the fund that helps run downstate transit agencies. That took in about $150 million less than expected last year. Laura Calderon leads the Illinois Public Transportation Association. She told lawmakers that the Downstate Operating Assistance Program, or DOPE, is funded largely by sales tax revenues, which are declining.
Growth in the DOPE reimbursements from the fund are outpacing the revenue from the state sales tax collections annually, making that fund unstable and ultimately insolvent.
Calderon suggested that lawmakers give her agencies a bigger slice of sales tax receipts from DOPE and ask the municipalities they serve to pay more. I'm Alex Degman.
Still to come, we'll learn about a new memoir from local author Larry Schnell that explores the little-known role of music in war. That story is coming up next on 217 Today, but first, your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Today, look for cloudy skies with showers and thunderstorms likely in a high of 60 degrees and an east wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy with showers and thunderstorms likely in a low of 45 degrees. Northeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with showers likely in a high of 53 degrees. North wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a chance of showers in a low of 35 degrees. North wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. And for Sunday, cloudy with a chance of showers in a high of 50 degrees and a northeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Next time on the 21st Show, our Friday Week in Review, including local elections in which several incumbent mayors were shown the door, and reports of a decade-long rise in parents and caregivers refusing to give their children the measles vaccine. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on the 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. When Rantoul resident Larry Schnell was exploring his parents' attic after his mother's death, he discovered a box full of love letters. Schnell's father was a Coast Guard sailor during World War II. In his new memoir, Schnell writes about the discovery of these letters, which documents his parents' love story, and also explores the little-known role of music in war. IPM student reporter Anna Koh spoke with Schnell about his new book, A Sailor's Song, Lost Love Letters of World War II.
When you first found your parents' letters in the attic, what kind of emotions did you feel? And have your parents ever told you about this before?
No one ever told us about it. And the odd thing was that my parents moved between upstate New York and Vero Beach, Florida. Upstate New York, the attic is full of war memorabilia. I mean, my father's Coast Guard uniforms and things are all there. But the attic in Vero Beach had nothing in it except that little bacon box. And so I focused on that after my mother died, and I opened it up, and I'm like, wow, I didn't know about all these letters. And I was really busy, so I just glanced through them. And I realized there was a lot of talk about music and love and war. And
in your book, you mentioned how your parents' letters were censored, and then your father, Arthur, had to create secret codes. What would you have felt if you found out that your letters were censored? How would you have felt?
No, I wouldn't like it. You know, it's kind of a fundamental principle in our country that letters are private. Of course, the post office considers first-class letters absolutely private. They won't open them either. And when people are separated in war, they're writing all kinds of love letters. And my father was kind of provocative, much more so than I thought. And so he had to, and my mother had to deal with the idea that those provocative, romantic, and sometimes sexual statements were being scrutinized by somebody. They didn't care about that, but they're still reading every word of it.
Could you explain more about music therapy in general? Because, yeah, I feel like it was an underrated aspect during that time and during the war, because it did console a lot of soldiers and, like...
The commander of the ship, Commander George Stedman Jr., was a cruise ship captain. Mm-hmm. And he was apparently a remarkable cruise ship captain because he was becoming a captain at age 23 of big ships. So Stedman played music for them. And I do believe he was in the early stages of understanding music therapy and how it would did two things. It eased the anxiety of the young troops, and it helped the seasoned or damaged troops deal with the horrors that they were bringing home. Mm-hmm. And he did mention that we tried to do our best to entertain you and make you happy on this trip, and we want to bring you home. So he was really cognizant of the mental state of the people on his ship, and he knew the role of music. It was very exciting because when my father got on the ship, he realized they had a piano.
On the ship.
They had an organ, a Hammond organ, which is a small organ. They had musical instruments. Mm-hmm. And they played on deck twice a day, a full military band in the afternoon and the dance band at night, unless the weather was a problem, of course. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I think it was around Australia, they got hit with a big wave and the whole band went tumbling. But nobody was hurt, no instruments were damaged, and when the weather was bad, they just waited it out. But in good weather, they played on deck, and everybody assembled. And from the newsletters that I read, Commander Stedman was always there for the concerts. So I think he understood the possibilities of what music could do for people.
Do you have any, like, final takeaways about your book?
Well, the big question that comes to mind, if we don't express the level of emotions and feelings that that people expressed years ago in letters, if we don't express them, if we don't share them, are we losing them altogether?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, is because of the electronic communication system, are we reducing our own emotional abilities? I mean, we're going to use emails and mm-hmm. texts no matter what.
But that's different from receiving a letter, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering if that has affected us in how we feel. I really have concerns about that.
That's author Larry Schnell from Rand Tools speaking with IPM Student Newsroom's Anna Koh. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by Michael Sweeney, Kulsum Khan, Kristen Schorsch, Alex Degman, and Anna Koh. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.